Good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Now, if you want to call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. 8295. But please hold your calls at least until after the half hour. We have with us a fascinating guest, certainly one of the best informed people that I know. He's been around even longer than I have. He got started in the late 50s analyzing what's happening economically. I didn't get started until the early 1960s. Bob Chapman writes something called The International Forecaster. It's about 35 to 40 pages, comes out every week. I always read it, and it's a fascinating overview of what's going on in the world today. All the information that you won't hear from Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, Shanna Hannity, or the other establishment communicators, conservative, liberal, Ted Koppel, Peter Jennings, Bob certainly gives you an overview of what's going on. And Bob Chapman, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, gee, thank you for having me again. I always love doing your show. Our minds seem to run in the same direction and on the same current, so it's very enjoyable.
Well, let's get a little bit. You were just saying before we went on the air that we were talking about what the establishment is doing. They're doing everything they can to destroy our economy and to destroy the value of the currency, which really doesn't make sense. You would think that they would certainly want to protect their base of operations here in the United States as they move to consolidate their power throughout the world. And yet, running massive deficits, trade deficits, which hurts the value of our currency, shipping our jobs and our factories overseas, all of this is only going to weaken America and eventually lead, I believe, to an economic collapse. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I basically agree with that. I think that what you're seeing is that, first of all, the people who are doing this are not dumb. They're very, very, very bright. And so they know what they're doing in the destruction of the U.S. economy and the world economy on all the facets that lead into it. And they have their think tanks going 24 hours a day all over the world, planning and scheming to do the things that they want to do to implement world government. And they realized many years ago that in order for America to accept world government, it would have to be economically on its knees. It would have to be lowered to a level at least of the second world. And I think they're doing the same thing in Europe as well. And, of course, Japan has been behind the eight ball since 1990, and they do everything that Washington says, so they're a candidate for major problems as well. And so what's going on just didn't happen. It wasn't bad decisions by the Fed or any administration or any group of people in Congress. There are groups behind the scenes, and particularly those that espouse world government, that are planning these things. And in the planning, they have done a number of things.
Well, we're going to have to get to some of those when we get back. We're going to have to take a break here. And, of course, some of our stations have been leaving us for the time being. We'll bring some other stations on, and then pretty soon we'll get back. Everybody will be together here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Bob Chapman. And Bob, go ahead and just bring up what you were speaking of.
So when the public sees outrageously low interest rates, M3, which over the past few years, 3.5 to 4 years, has increased $1 trillion, when they see Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac having terrible derivative problems, when they see a current account deficit, which is outrageous at 6% of GDP. They see fiscal deficits, as far as the eye can see, which are approaching 6% of GDP, and on and on and on. And these things just don't happen. These people in charge aren't dumb. They're being done deliberately. And so with that said, you can almost, with total surety, plan for some real problems in the world economy, and particularly in the United States, where it will begin, because it's the most important economic entity in the world. And so that's why I've been writing and talking about this for a number of years. And finally, we're on the cusp of the last mile, so to speak. And between here and perhaps the next 6 or 7 years, we're going to have to fight back and try to take our country back from these people who have planned the demise of the American Republic.
And certainly there's no question at all that I believe they believe that they're not going to be able to get Americans to give up their freedom and to give up their national sovereignty unless, of course, there is such a horrible catastrophe here in America that people will be pleading for someone to just to get us out of the mess we're in financially and probably even as far as domestic unrest is concerned. And of course, you know, when Americans' attention is focused on the war overseas, they really can't see what's going on here in America. They turn their back on the implications of the program to globalization, the opening up our borders, the ultimate plan to ultimately merge our economy with the economies of the rest of the countries here in the Western Hemisphere, and I think down the line to merge our currency with the other currencies here in the Northern Hemisphere. Do you foresee that happening, Bob?
Yes, I do, and I think that one of the important things in that line is the formation of CAFTA and NAFTA. CAFTA being the agreement, trade agreement with Central America, and the other one being with South America. And they have been trying to, you know, bring this thing to a conclusion, particularly FTAA. And the reason why is once they get
hold
those
that
two
thought
treaties...
Just a, hold that thought for just a moment, Bob. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest this evening is Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. And Bob was saying, we were talking about, of course, this idea of eventually unifying the whole of the Northern Hemisphere, including Canada, Mexico, probably the countries of Central America, Bolivia, and certainly Ecuador and El Salvador and Nicaragua. All of these Central American countries, Panama, will all be brought into this one trade zone, and then, of course, we'll begin to unite our currencies. Will be a trading block, then will be a currency block, and of course with that comes the loss of all of our freedom. Now the American people under ordinary circumstances would never want to give up their sovereignty, our constitution, and the freedoms that we have, but while our attention will be focused overseas, while our attention will be focused on the terrible threat of Islamic terrorism, why, if you divert somebody from really looking at the important things, they're going to be watching Osama bin Laden, they're going to be watching the tragedy unfold in the Middle East as we lose our freedom here at home. Pick up the story from there, Bob.
Well, I think one of the most important things that's developed in the last 2 years, actually 3 years, is the solidification of political power in Venezuela by...
Hugo Chavez,
and although I certainly don't like his socialist policies, but there are specific reasons for them. But he has identified the problem that we have, and that is that we've got to stop them from doing this because he realizes the prostitutive stance that they have taken in the past and are taking in the Middle East now, in which they intend to take in Venezuela and the rest of South and Central America. So what he has done is met the challenge. In fact, somebody was there from the State Department today, I would guess pleading with him, and I don't think he's going to listen. And his main goal is to stop FTAA externally. And also, of course, he's arming himself to the teeth, and I don't blame him because the United States government, the Bush administration, has tried to murder him twice. And I tell you something, if somebody tried to murder me, I certainly would take steps to protect myself, my country, and I would let the world know what Mr. Bush and his friends are up to. And so sometimes your enemy's enemy is your friend, and in this case, it's in spades. And I don't care what he does otherwise down there. I want FTAA stopped. I want CAFTA stopped. And if we stop them, it's going to set back their time machine years. And I would suppose that he probably is going to try to invade Venezuela. And, of course, they've ordered 50 of the latest stealth MiG-29s, and they're supposed to arrive in Cuba shortly, and Cuba has had the 29s, and so they're going to train the pilots, which would only be a short period of time, and they'll be ready to go. And they have sunburn missiles, which have a reach of about 120, 130 miles, and they can take out an aircraft carrier, like the old Exocet missile, which was used some 25 years ago. And they've ordered their first 100,000 AK-47s, and he wants to have a standing National Guard reserve, if you may, of about 1.5 million people who are trained so that they have to be called if they can be. And I don't blame them for doing all this. But the point here is that he is stopping them dead. He's doing what we haven't been able to accomplish, because the American public is so dumb. They don't even know what's going on, and they don't care to know.
Well, you know what's interesting? What's so interesting, Bob, is that certainly we see all of South America moving into the Marxist camp. This is happening in Argentina. It's happening in certainly in Brazil. It's happening in Peru. And, of course, with Hugo Chavez there, why the same thing is happening. So these people really don't want to seem to want to go into this free trade zone of the Americas because they don't want to be under the dominance of the United States. And so it may very well be that the best laid plans of mice and men will go astray, and the best laid plans of our globalists is not going to succeed. They're not going to be able then to establish, at least for a time, this consolidation of the Western Hemisphere, which they planned for such a long period of time. We actually got a talk where David Rockefeller 3 or 4 years ago was talking about how they anticipated having everything in place by the end of 2005. And, of course, David Rockefeller is one of the major schemers behind this whole incredible move towards world government and the destruction of America's freedom. So, but, of course, if they fail, why their timetable will be way off. They think that they're going to be able to push this thing through in the next few years. You're suggesting we may be moving into a war in Central America, or at least in Venezuela?
Yes, they're preparing for it now, and the plans are being laid. And, of course, their excuse is that the Venezuelans may cut off their oil. Well, I'm surprised they haven't cut it off already. I mean, if somebody took a shot at you twice, I think it's think twice about having commercial relations with them. But be as it may, yes, they are in preparation in Washington, and they're in preparation to go into Iran and Syria. And they've got everything set up. Everybody is in place for the implementation of the draft. And all they need is an event.
And, you know, it's so interesting, of course, that the president promised the American people we'd never have a draft. The Congress promised, in fact, they voted, I think it was all but two people voted, against having a draft. But that was before the election when they wanted the people to vote for them. But the reality is, we have two choices. Either we can remain the superpower of the world, and if we do, we're going to have a draft. We're going to have to give up the superpower, and then we can maintain an all-volunteer army. But you can't do both. And I think, of course, that there is no intention to give up the idea of the American empire. And with that, will necessitate a draft and more young boys being forced into service and sent overseas to die.
Well, there'll be hundreds of thousands of people who will be sending their children out of the country. This is going to be very serious. I've had over 3,000 contact me already, as to where to send their children, and or grandchildren for that matter. And some of them, have visited the sites that I've recommended.
Well, of course, Canada will no longer offer asylum to American boys to escape the draft.
That's correct. But there are other places, which I won't mention on the air because I don't want to give the government a lead. And, better to keep them in the dark. But I believe that there'll be not only people leaving the country, but I think that there will be major, major marches and problems and civil disobedience. And, I mean, they're going to have their hands full. And you got to remember, there's still 450 million weapons in the United States in the hand of the public.
But Bob, the thing is that they organize the anti-war movement in this country. I can see the hand of the establishment in so much of the anti-war movement, certainly during Vietnam. They wanted to control opposition, and I really fear that so many of the conservative and anti-communist and even the Christian organizations in the United States are thoroughly infiltrated by the establishment. You want a controlled opposition. You certainly don't want an opposition that you can't control, and I believe that they know exactly what they're doing. And there will be marches, but I suspect, during the Vietnam era, they will all be carefully coordinated exercises in futility, like what was that old saying of Shakespeare, all clanging cymbals but signifying nothing. Full of sound and fury, but signifying nothing.
Well, in the 1960s and early 1970s, what you say is true. First of all, today the situation socially is tremendously different, and of course financially and economically It's a light year away from where it was at that time. And I believe that the draft, which will be accompanied by a failing economy, is really going to have a different kind of effect than it had during the 1960s. People were more law-abiding then. Didn't, you know, revolt against the draft, so to speak. I mean, you had people who left the country, but there wasn't an awful lot of them. This time around, you're going to have both the left and the right, individually, not collectively, people saying, no, I'm not going to do that. And that's what's going to happen.
Well, I think that the great tragedy is, I think we should all be willing to fight for our country. But we're not fighting for our country when we're over in the Middle East. We're not fighting a war to protect America over there. We're fighting for an entirely different agenda, and I fear that if we go to war in the Central America, as you fear, why, this will be another example of America's being sent overseas to fight in wars that we've not been told the truth about, because I personally believe that we're doing everything we can to foment the anger and the reaction that Hugo Chavez is having. Because I think that we need these wars. First of all, this is one way to get people off the streets if they can't get jobs. The fact that the typical thing to do is when you get into a depression, you get into financial problems, the next thing is a war. And that's what happened back in 1938 and 39. Europe was in the doldrums after the Great Depression. America was in the doldrums. And the only thing that got us out of the Great Depression of 1929 was the Second World War. And people have forgotten that. But how convenient it was that the war came along at that time, which seems so incredible unless, of course, you understand that American industrialist financed Adolf Hitler, and anybody doubts that needs to get Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, some of the material we have from many sources. Trading with the Enemy is a wonderful book. We even have a letter written by Ambassador Dodd, the American ambassador to Germany in the 1936, writing to Colonel House. We'll be glad to send a free copy to one of our listeners. And the ambassador is saying to Colonel House, why are the American industrialists building up the war-making potential of the Germans? 100 corporations here building up the war-making potential of the Germans, and they can't make any money. They can't get the money out of the country because of exchange controls. Could this be deja vu all over again? We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest this evening, Bob Chapman of International Forecasting. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. And when we get back from this break, of course, we'll give Bob the opportunity to get his telephone number out, and you can learn how you can get a free copy of one of his newsletters. But, you know, as this whole incredible story unfolds, what about the situation as far as China is concerned? Seems we're doing everything we can to build up the military potential of China. Is there a threat, really, of America's involvement in Southeast Asia, or at least in Eastern Asia, if there is an attempt by China to take Taiwan by force?
Well, they can take Taiwan anytime they want, and because of what's going on now in the Middle East and our abilities to stretch as a nation, they couldn't do very much about it short of trying to use nuclear weapons on China. China has been evolving as an economy. That's why they're buying all of the natural resources and oil and things like that, so that they can build bridges and roads and factories and do all of the catching up that they didn't do since 1948. And they're even building, want to build a canal across Thailand to avoid the Malacca Straits, which are patrolled by our Navy. But the bottom line is China's got some serious internal problems. First of all, they don't have the experience in finance that Western nations have. They've been spending the last 50 years doing things that were not toward that end. And so what you have is a poorly run economy. It's still a command economy. It's still a communist economy. Yes, they've been changing it, but they still have that hole that they're in that they can't get out of, their way of thinking. And their financial structure is a mess. Yes, they're sitting on hundreds of billions of dollars of U.S. dollars, but they're willing to take losses on them if the dollar goes down another 30, 35%, whatever, because they know that they've captured markets. They know that we have, and others have moved a great deal of their industrial capacity to China, and they're counting on the fact that that they're going to continue to do what they're doing. And I don't think they think the United States is going to do anything about anything unless they do have a draft. And they're going to get as negatively affected by higher interest rates, which are coming fast.
You're speaking now here in the United States, the higher interest rates.
Well, yes, but it'll be reflected there as well. And they're not going to revalue their currency. Out of the question. They don't know what a level playing field is. And it's part of the kind of government, the kind of philosophy that they've had for so long.
But, of course, they will have to raise their interest rates to keep from runaway inflation, won't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they will. And of course, you know, their dollars that they're sitting on are getting inflated away. One of the reasons that they've done this tremendous amount of industrial infrastructure is to get rid of dollars. I mean, they're essentially dumping them.
Now, hold that thought for just a moment here as we bring our stations back on board with us. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Bob Chapman, the International Forecaster. And Bob, before we go on with our program, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get a copy of the International Forecaster, how, if they're interested, they can subscribe to it?
Well, they can call toll-free to get a complimentary copy, and that number is 800-685-4042. Now, we publish weekly, 48 or more times a year, and that's by email, and it runs around 35 pages. And we also publish twice a month in hard copy. The publication is about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. There's nothing like this publication anywhere. And for those of you who would like to visit our site on the Internet, the site address is theinternationalforecaster.com. Theinternationalforecaster is FORECASTER.com. And we answer everybody's questions. So if you have a question, you can email us at international_. An underscore is like a dash, but it's lower down. It's like a line on a line. So it's international_forecaster, FORECASTER, at Yahoo, YAHOO.com.
And I will tell our listeners that I do read this regularly when it comes. A fascinating insight into what's going on. An overview you just don't get any other place. And, of course, Bob always has information that I haven't seen any other place on the web. In fact, I was interested. It was just last week when he had an article there about Mr. Stiglitz. Now, for those of you who don't know, Professor Joseph Stiglitz got the Nobel Prize in Economics, a professor at Columbia, head of the Council of Economic Advisors for Bill Clinton for, 6 or 7 years, Vice President of the World Bank, wrote a wonderful book entitled Globalization and Its Defectors, I think was the title, Globalization and Its Defectors, anyway, it basically talked about the International Monetary Fund and how it would go into countries, lend them a lot of money, enslave the people there out of debt, and how usually countries were far worse off after the IMF had come in. And of course, as vice president of the World Bank, he could write and say this. He saw what was happening. When he left the World Bank, he came out and said the World Bank's doing exactly the same thing. So these two great monetary instruments that both controlled by the United Nations are really being used to impoverish the people throughout the world. All the time we talk about how we're there to help. Oh, we're so concerned that we really want to help. And what we're really doing is get these countries head over heels into debt so that most of the money that is collected by their governments comes back to our organizations in the payment form of interest, International Monetary Fund, national banks or international banks or the World Bank. So, you know, Joe Stiglitz had actually given a talk on the 5th of March of last month where he talked about how the dollar was going to lose its reserve status. Nobody else had that story except Bob Chapman. I looked it up on the web, was able eventually to verify that fact. But when Joe Stiglitz talks about the destruction of the American dollar, I think that we all should sit up and take notice. That was a fascinating...
Well, I think another thing we picked up on this past week that was not reported anywhere were the minutes of a meeting that was held at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York City. And what it was about is, you know, where is the economy headed? And they had several economists there. And one of them was Jim Grant, who has the publication about interest rates. And it's a very good one. And then Stephen Roach, who is the chief economist for Morgan Stanley. And they had several other people there, too. And they discussed what these problems are, the things that we're talking about. But the public didn't know about that because nobody reported it except me.
What was their conclusion?
We're in serious trouble.
Well, I already know that. The question is, you know, how long is it going to go? Is it going to go 6 months? Is it going to go 6 years? Is it going to go 60 years? Certainly Stephen Roach had come out and said we have a 90% chance of facing a financial Armageddon. That was pretty strong for the chief economist at Morgan Stanley.
It sure was. But, if he gets invited to the CFR, you know darn right well he's... just a hedge runner for them.
In other words, he knows what's coming down the line. The last thing, though, is they want the American people. And, of course, the reason we put on programs such as this, we want at least our listeners to begin to prepare for the very difficult times that lie ahead. We'll be right back with our special guest. Well, Dr. Stan back here with Bob Chapman, and of course we're talking about what's going on. And Bob was just saying that there was a secret meeting held at the CFR with many of the really big financial experts, among them Stephen Roach, chief economist for Morgan Stanley, who we certainly always read the material he's put out with interest. Well, did they have anything more specific other than telling us what we already know, and that is we're in trouble?
No, they didn't. And in relation to Morgan Stanley's Roach, and that is that he's their designated opposition, so to speak. And because they won't allow opposition like myself, as an example, to go on national television, I can't even get on FM radio. They won't let me on there. And so what they do is create the opposition, and he's the one that's been created. It's just like the communism. They used to create the communist opposition so that it would get its job done, because they wanted them to do their job to try to create the dichotomy between the East and the West. Well, the same concept is true in creating your own opposition with Stephen Roach. And I'll tell you the key to the fact that he is a false leader, and that is he continues and continues and continues to use establishment statistics when he knows they're all lies. And that's the defining line, and that's why I know he's on the other side.
Sort of like when Osama bin Laden wrote his letter to the American people just a few days before the last election and was talking about the casualties in Iraq, and he used the CIA figures of 15,000 Iraqi casualties rather than those accepted throughout the world of 100,000 Iraqi casualties. You knew that either Osama bin Laden didn't write that letter, it was actually written by the CIA, or maybe Osama bin Laden is working for the CIA. But when you're absolutely right. When somebody, supposedly in opposition, uses figures that are blatantly dishonest, as Osama bin Laden did, and as obviously Mr. Roach is doing, trying to tell us we've got low inflation, whereas we've got runaway inflation. Anybody who has two brain cells, realize the prices of oil, the prices of food, the prices of housing, the prices of medicine, prices of everything's going up, and they say we've got a 2% inflation. There's something wrong with the picture. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment. We have Ed calling from Aptos. We'll be right back here with our special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Ed calling from Aptos. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Good to hear you. I just tuned in. I have a fast question. I wanted to ask your guest what he foresees with the gas prices and what he sees coming down the pike with the gas prices. And I'll take the answer. Thank you.
Thanks so much. What's going to happen to gas prices? Are they going to level off and drop, or what's going to happen?
Well, first of all, when we first went into Iraq, what we intended to do was to take over the oil-producing facilities and sell them off. And they were going to be sold only to American oil companies. And this is one of the reasons we went in there. And one of the reasons they were going to do that is that they wanted to keep the price of oil down so they could accomplish the program that they had in process. That apple cart for them was upset by the Iraqi people and said, no, we're not going to put up with that. We're going to die first. And that's why we have the insurgency going on that we have. Now, with that said, I think they reversed gears and said, well, look, we can't control this thing. Let's turn this oil situation around. Nobody expects it to go up to $50 or $55 or $60 a barrel. So let's run oil up and we'll make another fortune on the way up. And so I believe that Wall Street and the elitists are behind the move in oil upward. How high it will go, I don't know. I see Goldman Sachs calling for $105 a barrel. Maybe they're right, I don't know. Maybe it's where it is right now. But I think it's a safe conservative assumption to believe that, number one, we have major oil inventories right now. Number two, we do have a gasoline refining problem, and the price of gasoline during the summer months will go higher, $2.40, $2.60, $3 a gallon, I don't know, but it will go higher. But I think that oil will stall out during the summer somewhere between $45 and maybe $70 a barrel. And I'm just guessing because nobody knows but the guys on the inside. And they're making those decisions, and we're not privy to them. All we can do is guess where they're heading and try to find out what they're doing before they do it.
Well, of course, what they do is they create the anticipation on our part. In other words, oh, my goodness, Morgan Stanley or Morgan Chase or whatever it is saying, it's going to go up to 106. So everybody's anticipating that. But the problem is that you're not going to get the price of oil down, until, number one, we begin getting more oil, and it will take probably 5 to 10 years to develop the oil that certainly is readily available to us up in Alaska, and there's a lot more there than we're being told. There's a lot of oil that we could develop, but, it takes so long to bring it online, so this is not something you can simply turn off or turn on like a spigot. This takes long-term planning. The other thing is they blocked the building of refineries, gasoline refineries in this country. We haven't built any for a generation, and we've actually had a couple of destroyed by fires and explosions. So obviously they want to create artificial shortages. Otherwise, we would have been building those refineries. So, obviously, I think they're going to keep the price of oil up. I think and gasoline, because I think they want to get us out of our cars. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, not only that, I think they want to bite into our purchasing power. Don't forget, I think they want to bring this economy down, and I think this is the last stroke that we're going into here. So the chances are the oil and gasoline prices will remain higher, higher. And that's the direction they seem to be headed in. And so based on that, you know, traders who are in oil and natural gas and also in gasoline or heating oil, but particularly gasoline, can play that market. But the pressure is probably to the upside for a number of reasons, which we've just explained. But there's another factor here, and it's extraordinarily important, and that is the price of gold and silver in relation to all of what's going on, and particularly to the price of oil and gasoline. I mean, every time oil has gone up, number one, we've had a recession or depression, and number two, gold has gone bananas. Well, it hasn't gone bananas this time because we get the central banks in there selling. Now, the question is, how much gold do they have left? I don't think they've got very much left. And the physical offtake is enormous in reaction to higher oil prices, among many of the other things we've talked about this evening. And so I think the situation in gold and silver is highly explosive to the upside. And I think people are being given a gift by the elitists who are suppressing those prices so that people won't think that there's a problem, because when gold and silver go up, professionals and then investors and then the public catch on to what's going on. So that's why they're suppressing gold and silver, but that's why you have an opportunity.
So you think that, of course, then gold and silver are a pretty good investment at the present time?
I think they're the only ones now. And we saw last week that the European Central Bank admitted that they sold gold. Now, they backed the euro 15% with gold. Now some of that gold's gone. Now, I don't know what the percentage is, but it was 15%, so I'll say maybe they're down to 13%. But the point is, one of the very strong points of the euro was that gold backing, because already the European economy is on its back. Unemployment's going through the roof. I mean, it's officially 12% in Germany, and if you put the numbers together, you're looking at 14%. And not far behind is France at 10.1, and you add all the make-believe jobs in Europe to 12%. And so growth in Europe this year, and this is supposed to be a good year, is going to be one-half of 1% to 1%. And so what they've done here in suppressing gold's upward movement recently with this ECB sale, they've also put people on notice, well, maybe the ECB is going to do that again. And if they do, I really don't want to own euros. Well, the only currency left that has gold backing is the Swiss franc, and it's a fairly thinly traded currency. So your option for currency is going to be only the Swiss franc, and the only option beyond that is gold and silver. So gold and silver, for unsophisticated investors, people who don't go into the international markets, is gold and silver coins, and for those who like to speculate, gold and silver shares, which I specialized in for 28 years when I was a stockbroker.
And now, of course, you're out of that business pretty well, aren't you?
Oh, I've been out for 15 years.
Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Jack, who's calling us from Ohio. And Jack, did you have a question or comment?
Two, actually. I spoke with a fundamentalist Christian today, directing his attention to the economic crisis looming and the genocide police action in Iraq. And he said, well, not to worry about any of that, because all we have to do really is trust in the Lord, and he'll provide the solutions, and we don't really need to get involved. That was directed toward Mr. Chapman's statement about the American people not wanting to know or not caring about what's going on.
Well, let's get Bob's response to that. What about this idea that, well, we don't have to worry about it, it's all in God's hands?
Well, And we can look back to when our ancestors came to America during the 1600s and the evolution of our colonies under Great Britain. And we decided as a nation that we no longer wanted to be under the heel of Great Britain. And these were all very, very religious people. They read the book just like people do today. And they took freedom into their own hands. And so there are those people who, in their view of Christianity, who will stand by and let the Lord take care of it. And I'm just not one of them. I think God helps those that help themselves.
Well, I think, of course, that God is going to bring terrible punishment on this country for what we have done in Iraq. In fact, if you study the history of the wars of the last century, every single one of them was contrived. And they were really brought about because there has been, going back to the time when our founding fathers first came to America in the 1600s, there's also been a dark force here. There have been a group of Rosicrucians and later Masons and Theosophists and other groups that were founded in the occult and can be traced back to the ancient mystery religions that took control of our government and has been using it to force other countries into this mold of a one-world government. I don't think this is God's doing. I think it's Satan's doing. And I think God is going to bring terrible, terrible punishment onto this country. And I don't know how any Christian can justify what we're doing over there and the torture that has been taking place against the people there. The figure, probably between 50 and 100,000 Iraqis slaughtered, 90% of the homes in Fallujah destroyed. There's no way you can possibly justify that thing, and there's no way God is not going to bring judgment upon the good people in this country who have allowed it to happen, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Jack, did you have another question?
Thank you, Dr. Stan. That's exactly what I attempted to explain to this young man. The second question is oil futures contracts. Would Mr. Chapman recommend that that would be a solid investment opportunity?
It could be a solid speculation, and it's extremely speculative. And if you're going to do that, you should consign the fact that whatever you commit, you have to worry about losing. 85% of the people in the commodities market who go in and get involved lose money. And so those are the caveats. You better be good, or you're going to get your head handed to you.
And
you have to put in tight stops, because if you don't, you're going to run into serious problems.
And I always like to say, that, of course, that commodities is an excellent way to make a small fortune out of a large one. Don't do it, Jack. And unless you know this game, they will destroy you. You won't be able to sleep at night. You won't be able to think about anything. And it will ruin your life, and you may very well lose what you have. So I think it's very, very foolish for anybody to get into commodities, that highly leveraged position. I've been there. I know. And I would no more think about doing that again, because, of course, it really can destroy your life. I've seen friends of mine, physicians, get into that. They ended up losing everything they had. They ended up losing their wife. They ended up getting a divorce. Don't do it.
Dr. Stan, could that be an explanation for the escalating oil prices, the speculation with oil contracts?
Well,
absolutely.
What are your thoughts on that, Bob?
Yeah, absolutely. And the speculation is being done by the insiders, who know exactly what's going on, and they're pulling in other people along the way, and of course they've been predetermined where they're going to get out, wherever that is, and the public again will get left holding the bag. But it's far simpler to go into numismatic coins or selective commemoratives, or into good quality or even speculative gold and silver shares. I mean, you don't have that kind of risk, and you don't have that kind of worry.
I see.
Okay, and thanks very much, Jack. Appreciate good call, and our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And really, what is so interesting is that if you really look at the price of gold and silver today, they have not really gone up that much. It's just that the dollar has fallen so much. If you were living in Europe and you were holding European currencies or Swiss currencies or foreign currencies, the price of oil, the price of gold and silver has not gone up that much. It is simply because the dollar has fallen so dramatically, and the average person here in America doesn't understand it because everything is perception, what things cost here. But I think we're really on the verge of a tremendous inflationary spiral. What are your thoughts on that, Bob?
We're already into it. They're talking 3.4% inflation, and of course they lie about everything. And they do that in the CPI and PPI figures by using what they call hedonics. And to make a long story short about hedonics is that they say that, if steak is $6 a pound, that you'll switch to hamburger at $2. Just assumptions, which are insanity. And that's what they've been doing to fix the figures. And they've done it with every statistic coming out of there. But real inflation is 9.5%. It's been that way for the last 5 years. If you compound that, if you had $100,000, you look at your 5 years, at approximately 10% compounded a year, you've lost 70% of the $100,000 if you had it under the mattress. And if you had it in the stock market, you lost money too. The only thing that's really gone up is commodities and gold and silver. And so those are the safer places to be. And inflation is going to continue to climb as interest rates go up. They will cause more inflation. I'm posting, in fact, last October I posted a 1% increase this year. We've got a quarter point, and I'm looking for three quarters more. Merrill Lynch and Goldman Sachs just raised theirs, Merrill to my level, which is three quarters of a point, and Goldman Sachs a point and a quarter from where they are now, before the end of the year. Now, if they're right, and we go a point and a quarter, and you add that onto a 4.5% 10-year U.S. Treasury, you've got 6.75, and that means that 30-year fixed mortgage rate will be 7.75.
And, of course, when they get up to that
high... The figure is 5.75 and 6.75 for the 30-year mortgage. And that's going to cause some real havoc prior to the end of the year in the real estate market. In other words, it could go down 5%, maybe a little bit more. The next year, rates are going to go up 2% more. And that's when the bloodbath's going to start in real estate.
Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Herman, who's calling in here from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Good. Well, as I was waiting, you're starting to answer the question I was going to ask about real estate. Now, do you feel that it would go down equally, or are there areas of the country that, like the coast, that might still stay up?
Well,
where markets are hot.
Let me give you a good example. I lived in Malibu for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I sold my house in October of 1988. For $1 million. In 1992, I could buy it back for $440,000, and I lived 300 yards from the coast.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what you're really saying is that it really just the housing market just tanked at that time.
Yeah, and in a housing market, it's far more overpriced today than it was then, and houses went down 40% then. And colossal debt.
If we're in a period of high inflation, wouldn't the real estate stay up?
Well,
wouldn't they monetize the debt?
All right.
No, because
hang on to that thought.
Rise.
All right.
We'll get back to that in just a moment, Henry. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman, calling from Carmel. Herman, and Herman is saying, well, look, but with a high inflation, even if we did have a tendency towards dropping the stock market, wouldn't actually the price of the property stay up just because of the inflation? So, what would your thoughts on that be, Bob?
No, because interest rates are going to be rising for two reasons, because of that inflation, and also to attract funds for overseas, because now we need to borrow $2.9 billion a day. And so for those two reasons alone, the answer is no. And besides, in this last year in California, 52% of the loans that were written for interest-only loans. Right now, the average loan, 36% of them are ARMs, one-year ARMs. And so the whole situation is so much more precarious today than it was in 1988-9 or 1980-81-82. And you can go back to 68, you can go back to 63. I've been through all of these markets, and they've all ended up the same way. And people who have investment property, they ought to be sellers. CalPERS just dumped half of their portfolio, and the other half is up for sale.
Now, CalPERS, you mean the California Pension Fund?
Yes, that's commercial property. They're bailing. And there's other real pros in there who are bailing at the same time.
All right, so CalPERS is really one of the smartest groups around. So they've done very, very well for the people here in California, government employees. So if they're getting out of commercial property, that's a pretty good sign. Anything else, Herman?
Well, then where are they putting their money if with the inflation going up?
Where is CalPERS putting their money?
I believe that a good part of their money is going into Euro and U.S. Treasury paper. I think they're really pulling back from the markets. But I don't have an up-to-date statement on them, you know, within the last month or so, so I can't say with a surety.
Well, maybe Bob will have that later. Herman, you just keep right on listening, and thanks you so very much for your call.
Thank you for being there.
Bye-bye. And, of course, Bob, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. Our guest has been Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. Again, get that telephone number out one more time before we let you go.
Yes, it's a toll-free number. It's 800-685-4042, 800-685-4042.
Well, thank you so very much for being with us. Our guest has been Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. And, of course, you can go to his website, international_forecaster. Bye-bye. Good night.
Good night.
And if you wanted to get hold of Bob Chapman, that website was international_forecaster@yahoo.com. That's international_forecaster@yahoo.com. It's a fascinating information there. I hope that you'll, we'll have Bob on from time to time. I think he always has very interesting and provocative information. So, we have various experts. They have various opinions. You pay your money, you take your chances, you take your choice. But I try to put on people who I think certainly can back up their positions and have a lot more experience in this than I have. So, and then, of course, if you really want to understand what's happening in America financially, we have a number of books. One of them is called The Creature from Jekyll Island. That's The Creature from Jekyll Island. It's the story of the Federal Reserve System. And then, of course, we carry the book of the Federal Reserve Conspiracy, written by Professor Anthony Sutton before he died. That's the Federal Reserve Conspiracy, because it is a conspiracy. It was planned at a secret meeting on Jekyll Island back in 1910, on how they would hoodwink the American people into going along with a paper money system that allowed a small group of people to be able to control the economy of our country, control the political system, control both political parties, and have sufficient funds, which they created out of nothing, to buy up the media and the corporations. It was a wonderful scam. They've done a great job with this for almost 100 years, 90 years now, 92 years. But, of course, the day of reckoning is just about to come. And then, of course, the third book would be Fiat Money, Inflation in France. The book was written 120, 130 years ago by Andrew Dickinson White, who had established Cornell University, and he's writing about what happened in France in 1789. As you read that book, it's like deja vu all over again, and you can see everything happened there that's happening in the United States today. And, of course, the people turned against God. They prospered. There was a stock market was booming. There was a breakdown in morality. And then, of course, you remember what happened. They ended up with a dictator, and his name was Napoleon Bonaparte, and were plunged into a series of terrible and destructive wars that really destroyed the flower of the youth of the manhood of France. So, and then, of course, we have a video. It's called Phenomenon Monopoly Man. And there you'll hear Milton Friedman telling how, and actually an interview with Milton Friedman as he talks about how the Federal Reserve System created the Great Depression, and all the suffering that happened in 1929. Fascinating insight from a number of very well-known and very, very intelligent people on the monetary system. The information you need if you hope to survive the coming economic turmoil, because I do believe we're moving into a period of economic turmoil. You can go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Pull down my September and October 2004 newsletters. That's September and October 2004 newsletters, and read them. They'll give you tremendous insight into the forces that work behind the scenes moving us in this economic system, which I believe is really the very tool of Satan himself. I believe that there are spiritual forces behind a fraudulent monetary system that has been used to enslave the people of the world and will one day be used to enslave the people of our country. Anyway, you'll find the September and October 2004 newsletters at radioliberty.com. If you don't have access to the Internet, you can request one of those letters. We'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. Of course, we do hope many of you would want to get the letter on a regular basis or join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do. 5 hours every day on the Internet, and 5 hours on radio, and 5 hours on satellite, and 4 hours on shortwave. Incidentally, our shortwave frequencies in the afternoon are 15120. That's 15120. And we'll be back in just a moment to 15120. That's 15120. We'll be right back here in a moment for the next hour. Good evening, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295, but Please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Arthur Bernclough from Veterans for Constitutional Law. And Arthur is an advocate for the veterans. And if you, you read the history of the way our veterans have been treated, when we go off to war, why, our veterans, it's our fighting men, they just they deserve our applause, and they deserve our support and our concern. But when they come home, and many of them are injured and will bear the pain of their wounds throughout the rest of their lives, physical wounds, psychological wounds, or the experiments that were carried out on the Gulf War veterans during the Gulf War, I mean, half of them are ill because of those experiments, or the 43,000 veterans who they gave an experimental vaccine to back in the early 1950s, experimental flu vaccine, destroyed the minds of many of them, or the veterans were exposed to the nuclear blast just to see what would happen. To these men, of course, we owe a debt of gratitude, and they should be taken care of, and the wicked people who did this to them should be held accountable, but they never are, and the veterans are seldom cared for. Well, this evening, why we're going to be talking about a different, little different subject, about a book that's called The Plot to Seize the White House. Now, the book is written by Jules Archer, and it was written, I guess, in the early 1970s, totally suppressed today. Arthur, what will one of those copies of that book cost you on the Internet today?
Oh, somewhere around $350.
Yeah, so they really don't want you to get this book. They don't want you to know that there was a plan to seize the White House, a military control of our government back in the 1930s. And we carry another book, of course, written by William Still, about during the time of the Nixon administration. There was another plot to seize the White House, but it didn't go anywhere near as far or have the charismatic leadership that the plot did in the 1930s. And, of course, this was when they were going to try to get Major General Smedley Butler to lead a massive march on Washington, D.C., and simply surround the White House and take the president captive, and he would become then the tool of the men who financed the march. And who were they? Why were they? The very people who created the Depression. And, of course, it was the great industrialists of America, and specifically Thomas Lamont, who worked for J.P. Morgan and Company. And, of course, those of you who remember, we have a letter from President Roosevelt to Colonel House, written in November of 1933. We'll be glad to give any of you a copy of it, where he says, as you and I both know, Colonel, why the financial elements have controlled the government of the United States going back to the days of Andrew Jackson. Financial elements have owned the government of the United States going back to the days of Andrew Jackson. President Roosevelt knew that. And those very financial elements intended to seize the White House. And this is the most incredible story. And it is written, of course, based upon the documentation, interviews with and information from General Smedley Butler, who they tried to bribe him, they tried to appeal to his patriotism, and he eventually exposed the plot, and that was the end of it. But there really are people who would like to have a dictatorship in America. The Plot to Seize the White House is a fascinating, fascinating book.
Oh, my God, yes.
And we'll be back in just a moment with Arthur Bernclough. Well, Arthur, why don't you tell our listeners about the book and about this incredible story that has been so thoroughly suppressed from the American people?
We did the show about 3 weeks ago, I believe.
Well, but on an entirely different...
Okay. All right, because I came prepared for something else this evening. But that's okay. What I'm doing is, on the donations that we get for Veterans for Constitutional Law, when I get $300 worth of donations, I buy 10 more books. And that'll cover United Parcel shipping and everything, and somebody who doesn't have the book, I have it printed up an extra large size. It was a pretty small book, but I have it printed up in extra large size. And the government thinks that this book is lost to posterity, that nobody will ever be bothered by this book again, especially some of these people in the government. But they better think again while I'm still alive, because every time I get my hands on $300, I'm ordering 10 more books. And we're going to sell the books for $25, just what it costs to print, plus the United Parcel charges to ship it.
And I think it's really so interesting that basically what Major General Smedley Butler said, he wrote a number of speeches. One of them was, war is a racket. And he said, you know, war is the only racket where the profits are measured in dollars and the losses in lives. And he recognized, of course, that all of the wars he'd been involved in China and in South America, all were fraudulent. And then, of course, he fought in the First World War with the Marine units that were there fighting in Europe. And I suppose in Belle Woods, the other areas where of course, the Marines got their name. They called them the Devil Dogs, the Germans did, because of the ferocity with which they fought. And then when Major General Butler finally realized that it was all fraudulent, there was no reason to go to war in Europe, there was no reason for American boys to be dying in Europe anymore than there was a reason for them to be dying in South America and China, and he wrote his famous book, War is
America. The reason we went to war is to protect American business interests. We didn't go to war to protect the United States or to protect the citizens of the United States. We strictly went to war to protect American business interests. And that's the way it's been in every single war that I can remember.
Well, the great tragedy is this is true, but the fact that there would be a plot to use Major General Smedley Butler, it was so very, very popular with the fighting men who had fought in the First World War, and they'd been promised a bonus when they came home, and the government had no intention to give it to them. The politicians say one thing, they do another, and there was a march on Washington, D.C., and many of them were shot. We'll be back here in just a moment with this incredible story. Well, certainly Major General Smedley Butler was one of the most highly decorated Marine officers of all time. He had two Congressional Record Medals of Honor, and of course he fought in Nicaragua and South America, he fought in China, he fought in the First World War, and his men loved him. And then of course there was a marches on the nation's capital, I believe in 1932 or so, and of course General MacArthur was ordered to break up those marches, and some of the veterans who were marching demanding that the bonus that had been promised be given to them were killed. American troops moved into the camps where the veterans were, and of course they beat them down with their gun stocks and bayonets, and of course there was tremendous animosity on the part of the veterans.
They actually ran them out of town.
Right.
They ran them into the swamps of Virginia. I did a lot of research on this, and we found there were only three of the veterans that were killed. Believe it or not, only three veterans died, but there were many veterans injured and hurt and had to be hospitalized. But there were three fatalities during this.
It was because of that, of course, that the veterans would not follow General MacArthur, but they would follow Major General Smedley Butler. So,
So
the elitists, and we're talking about people tied into J.P. Morgan, specifically Thomas Lamont. It's all in the book. The secret plot to seize the White House. Why, they decided that they were going to get Major General Smedley Butler to rally the veterans behind him and lead a massive march on Washington, D.C. You pick up the story there.
Well, they had the Rockefellers, the DuPonts, the Murphy Company, Standard Oil, U.S. Steel, the Morgan Bank, anyone back then, any financial interest, wanted to see FDR, power taken away from FDR. Basically, they wanted to go back on the gold standard. We had gone to a paper standard. They wanted to go back on a gold standard. And they used the American Legion as the strong arm over there. In fact, they sent one of their lawyer salesmen, a fellow by the name of McGuire, they sent him out to Europe to study dictatorships out there, fascist dictatorships, one in Italy with Mussolini, Hitler's in Germany, and France. France at that time also had a military dictatorship. And they sent them out there to study that and bring it back to the United States as a model for raising an army here. And they singled out General Smedley B. Butler. The only thing is, they picked the wrong man, because Smedley Butler was a patriot above anything, and he did not believe in overthrowing the government. Smedley Butler went directly to the House Un-American Activities Committee, which was chaired, co-chaired at that time by Senator Dickstein of New York and Senator McCormick of Massachusetts. And they had the hearings, and the hearings went on like for almost about a year and a half, even longer than that, for longer than a year and a half. And at the end of the hearings, what happened exactly was nothing was nothing. FDR panicked at the last minute and said no jail terms for anybody. If they have jail terms, it would destroy the Democratic Party, because two of the people in on this plot, one was former New York Governor Al Smith, who ran for president on the Democratic ticket, and going back a couple of years, a couple of terms before that, there was a lawyer, W.B. Davis, who also ran in 1924 on the Democratic Party for president. And with all that work that was done and all those hearings, nothing ever really happened. Nobody got any jail terms. There was no punishment. The only thing is, a wonderful book was written in 1973, and these same interests panicked, and they pulled that book out of the stores, out of the bookstores, off the shelves, out of the schools, out of the libraries, and the book has disappeared for all posterity. A perfect example, like Adolf Hitler used to have book burning. We cleared the book out, and Jules Archer, the author of this book, was not a novice. He had written about 35, 40 books prior to writing the plot to seize the White House.
And of course, and what they do, there are many ways to do this. Of course, they can come in, they can buy up the publisher, or they can simply buy up all the copies of the book and shred them, and they actually do this sort of thing. Or they certainly just don't distribute the book at all, or as they did with Monica Jensen Stevenson's book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye. They called the copies back off out of the bookstores, because I remember going to a bookstore and seeing it on the shelves and went back a week later, and I said, what happened? They said, oh, they recalled the book. So they called them back, and then, of course, they never see the light of day. Why? Because they don't want the American people to read certain books. This is how the game is played. And the average American has no idea that anybody would be controlling what they read, as they did with Professor Carol Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, in his wonderful book, Thracian Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. They bought the publisher and destroyed the plates of the first half of the book, so it could never be reprinted in toto. And the story of how we have the book available now is a whole different story, but it certainly had nothing to do with the establishment, because they feared the American people were not smart enough to understand what was going on, and they might object to the fact that there is a ruling elite that controls both political parties and makes mockery out of the electoral process, and, of course, that they have created wars and sent our boys overseas to die and created diseases and epidemics and depressions and inflations and assassinations, and all of these things go on, but the last thing they can allow is for the American people to know the truth.
Oh,
so
yes,
that really is what goes on behind the scenes. Anyway, we're talking about the book, The Plot to Seize the White House. So pick up the story from there. There were the hearings. And, of course, Major Medley Butler actually wrote a number of books about the military, about this cabal that really controlled our government. And he was writing back in the 30s. I think he died, about 38 or 39, just before the Second World War?
Exactly. Now, General Butler, I'll give you an idea of what kind of a man General Butler was. This is a direct quote from him. I spent 33 years being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer for capitalism. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers in 1909 to 1912. I helped make Mexico, and especially Tampico, safe for American oil interests in 1916. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for American sugar interests in 1916. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenue in. I helped in the rape of half a dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. In China in 1927, I helped see to it that Standard Oil went on its way unmolested. I had a swell racket. I was rewarded with honors, medals, promotions. I might have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was operate a racket in three cities. The Marines operated on three continents. This was General Butler.
And, of course, this is part of a history that has been totally blacked out by the controlled media. We're not supposed to think about this. This man was a patriot. He loved America, but he realized there was a force of evil in our country at that time. Well, that same force of evil is here a couple of generations later, leading us into even far more bloody wars, only I fear that this current one that we're involved in, there will be serious repercussions, because now we're no longer protected by oceans. We have intercontinental vessels that, of course, we've given the technology to the Chinese communists so they can give it to the Iranians, and so they can give it to the Pakistanis, so they can give it to the North Koreans, so they can share it with the Russians. We gave them the technology so that they can one day attack us, which really doesn't make sense unless you recognize the spiritual forces behind this whole incredible battle. And my fear is, because the American people don't remember what happened in the 1930s, that we will, of course, have to go through some terrible, terrible times here. For those who cannot recall history are condemned to repeat it. And the difficulty is, we will continue fighting these wars. They will continue manipulating our government. They will continue sending our boys overseas to die in senseless wars, until the American people understand that all of these wars are contrived. Well,
you know, in many ways, this was very similar, Dr. Stan, to Andrew Jackson refusing to renew the charter of the USA Bank.
That was the second bank of the United States, right?
Right.
That was about 1832.
Yeah, course, very similar.
Well, of course, as you remember, of course, Andrew Jackson had been a general. And he was the one, of course, who had led the defense of New Orleans, one of the great heroic stories of all time. And had it not been for making a treaty with the pirate of the bay who was down there,
Lafitte.
Jean Lafitte, right? Why New Orleans would have fallen, and very well the southern part of the United States would have fallen in the War of 1812. But Andrew Jackson always used to say, "One man with courage is a majority."
Yep.
And I would say that I would put him into the same category as Major General Smedley Butler, because President Andrew Jackson stood up against the members of his cabinet, stood up against the financial interests in the country, stood up against the majority of the people in the Senate and in the House of Representatives, stood up against the media, and said, you have two choices. You have either me and no bank, or you have the bank. But, of course, I will kill the bank. And he killed the second bank of the United States, and at least we had a relative monetary freedom.
I see a great similarity between these two great Americans.
You're absolutely
great similarity.
Right. We'll be back here in just a moment with Arthur Burnclough. And if you have any questions, give us a call, 1-800-1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. The book is, of course, The Plot to Seize the White House. Or is that the secret plot or just the plot?
The plot.
The Plot to Seize the White House by Jules Archer. You're not going to hear this discussed on most radio programs.
Oh, no. That's right, and forget it.
Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening, Arthur Burnclough, we're talking about the plot to seize the White House, a fascinating part of our history, totally blocked out by the media today, not taught in most of our colleges, certainly never mentioned by our political leaders today, and yet here was a retired Marine Corps general who was willing to risk everything to save America, because even though he hated the people that were involved, realizing they were manipulating the government, he would not turn against the Constitution. So it really is a very, very heroic story of a true American hero that most people have never heard of today. Arthur?
That's very true.
So,
you've kind of got me off balance, because I wasn't prepared for this evening. I had some other stuff put aside for tonight.
All right, fine. Well, let's get into the other material then. Go ahead.
Okay, you're familiar with a lawsuit that the Knight Ridder newspapers had sued the Veterans Administration on the Freedom of Information Act.
Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay? If a veteran wanted to find out any information about his case, about his files or anything, he'd get several different reactions from the VA. Either they would tell him his records were burned in the famous fire in St. Louis, or they wouldn't even answer him. They would ignore any request even on the Freedom of Information Act. And they were sued by Knight Ridder newspapers on this, and now they can't. They have to provide the information, otherwise they're going to go to jail.
Well, I think it'll be a very, very cold day in Hades when any government official goes to jail for lying and for refusing to divulge information. In fact, they have the full backing of the current administration in Washington, D.C., who's told them simply to ignore Freedom of Information Act requests, and they'll back them. I know a fellow recently, in fact, it was the Judicial Watch. They won a case with the government for files actually having to do with Bill Clinton's pardons. He had, I remember, pardoned 140 people, a lot of them hardened criminals, and people like Susan McDougal, who refused to reveal Bill Clinton's criminal activity in the Whitewater affair, and Marcus Rich, who was a criminal, and of course Marcus Rich's ex-wife had given Bill Clinton's library a couple of $100,000, and so he got pardoned, and it was just blatant buying of things. Well, anyway, they wanted to get those records from the Justice Department. They had 950 pages, and Justice Department delayed, so finally they sued, they got a court order to get them, and they got all 950 pages.
Oh, yes.
Everything blacked out. 950 pages. So
that's a lot of government bunkings.
You see, total disregard for the law by the current administration. How can anybody back a lawless administration? I mean, I'm a lifelong Republican. I served on the State Central Committee for a decade, at least. But, you know, I recognize what has happened. The Republican Party is controlled by the same dark forces that control the Republican... Pardon me, the Republican Party is controlled by the same dark forces that control the Democrat Party, and they're no longer adhering to the laws of this country. So, anyway, this young man, they're trying to get the records, and then one of the newspapers brings suit. What happened?
The newspapers brought suit, and the federal government, the court, decided in favor of the newspapers, and the VA was now abide by the Freedom of Information Act. They cannot defy the Freedom of Information Act as they've been doing and getting away with it. Now there's going to be jail terms meted out. And Knight Ridder on all
that
newspapers...
Hold that off for just a moment here.
Pardon?
Well, Dr. Stan here, and Chris Arthur is talking about a lawsuit that was brought by a newspaper against the Veterans Administration so that the veterans could get their records from the Veterans Administration. Now, a veteran wants to know, about his claim for disability or for compensation or whatever it would be. The Veterans Administration would refuse to give it to them. In fact, the Veterans Administration does everything they can to avoid giving any sort of benefits to many veterans. In fact, if you work for the Veterans Administration, we even get bonuses for turning down the requests of needy American war veterans. But anyway, all these records have been sealed, but now apparently the court case is going to force the Veterans Administration to release those records. But
they wouldn't dare defy it now.
They can black them out just exactly.
They can try it, but there's stories going in all the newspapers. If you have a computer and you access the Knight Ridder webpage, you'll find stories going on in almost every newspaper, about 50, 60 newspapers across the country. You'll find the Chicago Sun-Times, since December 2nd, has initiated a massive VA corruption expose, and every day since December 2nd, they've got anywhere from 2 to 4 entire pages telling horror stories of what happens from one veteran to another veteran and applying for their disability benefits. And I think the whole system is starting to unravel, and I'm glad I stuck around this long all these years to fight them, so now I might even be able to pick up a piece of the roadkill. That's what I'm in here for.
Well,
I'm in here so a lot of friends of mine who had claims in, who died waiting for their claims, I want to see these people a little justice done for them. A lot of them are dead, but Even if you're dead, you can still do justice in his case by taking these people down.
Well, I think what's so significant is the fact that, you know, we have, of course, about 30,000 veterans now coming back from the Gulf War trying to get benefits, but there are over 300,000 veterans from the Gulf War and from the previous wars trying to get benefits, and the whole system is broken down. There's just no way they can take care of all of these cases. And they acknowledge it. So what are they going to do with all these veterans of the Gulf War, of the second Gulf War? They're going to have to wait until they get through these 300,000 cases. And they drag them on and on and on with the idea that maybe if they wait long enough, they'll die and they won't have to give out the money. And they actually pay people who work for the Veterans Administration bonuses.
Oh, yeah.
Deprive people, veterans who are entitled to benefits, to reward them for depriving needy and certainly veterans who are entitled to benefits, preventing them from getting those benefits. That really is unconscionable.
Dr. Stan, we call this the VA's 4% solution.
And the 4%, you mean about 4% get the disability.
That's right. They pay each other bonuses to deny claims, and this has been going on with our government for 70 years. 70 years it's been going on.
And, of course, the average individual doesn't have any idea of this, and certainly the average man going into the service who's promised all these things doesn't have any idea. He's being lied to.
Now, I've got a whole bunch of stuff here that Knight Ritter sent me, and I'd like to get a couple of these cases read out here. I think people should know what's going on with our government. A lot of people think that the VA is a benevolent organization. I think it's a consummately evil organization and a mean-spirited. At the very least, they're a mean-spirited organization. And they've got a man running the benefits section now who is the head of Secretary Principe's, he calls him the head of his task force. Admiral Cooper, Admiral Daniel Cooper. And on my radio programs that I appear on, I keep imploring Admiral Cooper to resign that job he has with the VA. He's now their benefits director, and he seems to do all the dirty work for the VA, and I keep imploring him to resign the job. And I said, that's not a job for a man, it's a job for a sneaky little snit. And he knows it. I've called him out on many, many programs. Of course, he hasn't responded to me. Nobody's killed me yet, but, you know, he hasn't responded to me. But I'm saying he should resign that job before he disgraces the uniform that he's worn half his life any further than he has by working this job.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Arthur Burnclough, and we'll be talking, of course, for the rest of the evening about what's happening with the Veterans Administration. And, of course, if you'd like to call us, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Arthur is with the Veterans for Constitutional Law. Veterans for Constitutional Law, it's an all-volunteer organization of people who are trying to help veterans who get trapped in this VA system. And you must understand that it is a totally corrupt system. The system is set up not to reward disability claims or claims of any sort, but to deny them. And when you get caught in this and you don't know how to handle it, why, you need people like Arthur. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we've got John calling from Southern Oregon. Hi, John. I guess it's Joe. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Gentlemen, good evening to you. I'm glad to hear your show. And, you know, shortwave is, I'm listening strictly on shortwave until I get my satellite computer hook up in about a month.
All right, fine. And like, how is the signal coming in?
It's coming in very good. It doesn't come in worth a darn in the afternoon or whatnot, but at this time of the day on the Oregon coastal range, at 2,800 feet, it's coming in, elevation, that is.
All right, are you listening to 5835, or are you listening to the other station?
No, you're on 7465?
7465, right? We're on two stations, so you're listening to 7465.
Let me write down the other one. What's the other one?
5835.
5835, okay, I got that right down. Thank you very much, sir.
Right.
I just wanted to say that, you know, God bless you and all the shortwave radio broadcasters from Alex Jones to you name it, to Pete Peters. I mean, you guys are really the voice of freedom and our people. I just want to really salute you for the courage, because courage is in short supply in America after 60 years of dumbing down our school system, as Ms. Isserby said, and the deliberate dumbing down of America. But about veterans' issues, I was in the Army as an MP, and I learned then that I didn't want to be a civilian cop. That was 1970. And then 19 days out of the Army, I went into the Coast Guard, and there's a tremendous difference at that time, because the Coast Guard was the enlisted people were, there was just a great majority of people that college education, they were graduates or they had 3 or 4 years of college because they'd been drafted and they ran to the Coast Guard. And at that time, the Coast Guard had about, I think the actual number was something like 22% prior service from other branches of the service. But what I'm trying to say is that so many veterans out here. I have a brother-in-law that's retired from the Army Reserves, and he was in the 101st Airborne and served in An Shao in 67 in Vietnam. And he doesn't want, neither of my nephews are being allowed to enlist in the service. And we're in a real pivotal crossroads in American history, because when you have veterans doing that, and the real veterans that want to speak out, they're not being heard in the media. I don't care for television.
That's right.
And we're at a time that, you know, I attended the University of Oregon on GI Bill, and never once in a history class would they dare bring up Alexander Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago. And it's really the duty of a veteran.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Joe. We got to go.
Dr. Stan?
Go ahead. We'll keep you on.
Yeah, look, I've got a lot of stuff, but I'm prepared here for this.
Okay, we've got Joe calling from Southern Oregon, and Joe, of course, is a veteran, and he's saying that other people in his family are veterans as well, but they're not going to allow their sons to join the military. And, of course, I believe that we need people who are willing to defend America, but we're not defending America when we're over in the Middle East, when we're over in the Far East and fighting in Vietnam. We're not defending America when we're in Korea fighting a no-win war. We're not defending America if we invade Venezuela in Central America, which apparently it certainly looks as if we're preparing to do. We are not defending America. We want to defend America, but we don't want, of course, to use the American military to enrich people. And, of course, to pursue this real goal, and really what it's all about, is creating a new world order to destroy this country, destroy our sovereignty, to merge us with other countries. That's what it's really all about. And, of course, I believe what they want to do is impoverish our nation, collapse our economy, and the people will plead with our leaders to come up with a solution.
That's the purpose of the whole thing.
Well, let's go ahead and let Joe finish. Go ahead, Joe.
Dr. Monteith, that was a mouthful, and that's right on target. That's a bullseye for you. but let me say this. I want to say a couple of sentences here. Be quiet. You can ask me a question, or I'll say goodnight. But I want to see how I can phrase this here. That all of our wars in the last 100 years have been against the interests of the United States and have hurt us, and we've been lied to. And great men like Ford and Charles Lindbergh have been denigrated by the people who control and do own our media. I want to say this: we're in a real crises right now, and many of the men that enlisted in the reserves and the National Guard, when they went in, they were looking for training or a job. They didn't have anything on their mind about Iraq or other contrived. They were serving their state and their nation. They were not involved in politics. They're just young guys. And the combat officers in this country, and the people that really want to speak for America, they're not going to get on the national talk radio shows, the television. They're not going to let them on. But I just want to say, going back to my my brother-in-law, you know when you have a guy that won a Silver Star, did his duty, and he's telling his two sons that you're not going to go in the service, you know that there's a tide changing in our country. And the thing I wanted to say here, that our borders are open, and you have high government officials calling those men on the borders vigilantes. And you have a situation where we have given the wealth of our nation to another nation that is expanding its borders, securing its borders, and yet their interest is to open our borders. Now, I only want to say this as a veteran, and I'm speaking to all the veterans out there that have access to a computer, and if you don't have a computer, go to your library, and I beg you to look at the U.S.
Let him go ahead and finish, and then we'll let him go. Go ahead.
I beg you to go to USSLiberty.org. And the other thing, the president, Alexander Lukashenko, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, of Belarus, the former Republic of Russia, he's standing up for his people, and he's vilified in the American press, but he's one of us. A Christian, and he stands for his people, and he doesn't want his women sent into white slavery.
Okay, fine. Well, thanks.
But one last thing about veterans.
Okay, go ahead. But Joe,
the Dynor Corporation that Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney on C-SPAN that last time I was on the computer, I saw the hearings in Washington where she had the Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld questioning him about white slavery out of the former Yugoslav Republic, where they and we have 200,000 white women and children that have been sold into white slavery, and the Dynor Corporation was involved in that.
Okay, Joe, everything you're saying is right, but we want to let Arthur talk. So thanks very much for calling, and go ahead, Arthur.
Dr. Spann, let me call you after the show and talk to you personally, because I'm throwing a curveball here tonight, and all the stuff I had prepared, it's down the drain.
Well, go ahead.
The show is more than half over, and it doesn't make sense because.
Well, go ahead. Go ahead with the material that you have. Anyway.
I'll never finish.
Well, get as much as you can, and we'll cover it some other time. But why don't you go ahead?
That you hold the calls when I'm on. Hold the calls.
All right, fine.
Because these people come on a lot of times and they don't talk about what we're talking about.
Well, I think that Joe had felt very deeply, but of course it does detract from the program.
But it throws the whole thing off stride, and I had a lot of good things planned for this show tonight. But,
okay, do you want to go ahead with them?
We won't have enough time to cover it. Could you schedule me another day?
Well, we can, but of course we still have...
I'll do the best I can right now, but... You know, we don't have time to cover everything that I've got.
Let's cover as much as you can, Arthur.
Yeah, I spent the whole day putting stuff here together for the show, and...
Well, let's go ahead with what you have.
And I haven't spoken one line of what I put together.
Well, let's go ahead.
Okay, I'd like to talk about right now, before we get into Knight Ridder, if we have time to get into Knight Ridder, a continuation of what we had on the last program before, on the corruption in Chicago, the expose that's going there. A continuation of it is they had a meeting between the Veterans Administration Secretary Nicholson and veterans. Now, the meeting turned into another VA farce because the Veterans Administration and the National Veterans Service Organizations, they stopped the aggrieved Chicago veterans from attending the conference and speaking. Now, thanks to fine journalism and this hard-hitting crusading work of the Chicago Sun-Times reporters, led by Cheryl Reed, it looks like the VA now is on the run, because the VA never really did learn how to play defense. However, they're well-known throughout the veterans' communities across America for their slash-and-burn tactics pertaining to the cavalier attitude they have about veterans' disability compensation and veterans' benefits in general. The original story of this VA thievery first broke on December 2, 2004, and it's carried consistently through to the present day, and it hit with such impact that the VA's infamous press corps did not have time to practice their damage control and thereby their spin control like they did in Atlanta, the Atlanta regional office, when Judge Richard Story, thanks to me flying down there to Atlanta, sentenced 12 VA rating board members, or we call the Dirty Dozen, sentenced them to federal prison for 3 to 6 years, and the leader of this group, Sarah Prater, who was also the congressional liaison, she was sentenced to 13 years. Now, what they did is they stole $11.2 million from the families of dead veterans by simply putting their own claim numbers for that of dead veterans, and if it wasn't for one greedy person down there taking out over 300 post office boxes in the Atlanta area, they would have never caught them.
Now, how long ago was this, Arthur?
This was the end of 2003.
All right, because I don't remember hearing about that. I don't think most people did.
The reason you didn't hear about it was the VA's press corps. Only two newspapers carried the entire story, the Atlanta Constitution and the Chattanooga Times. They carried the entire story, and the Atlanta Constitution carried it because one of the reporters was an editor there, Bill Rankin. And which leads us into a horror story. We're talking about the VA's press corps. Now, the VA has a press corps of 2,220 people being hidden under unrelated job titles, and their sole job is to keep any negative news about the VA out of the newspapers. Now, they actually deleted the entire story except for these two newspapers, and so 2 years later, in Chicago, America's War Injured Disabled Veterans are being redeemed now with what's happening over there, and it leads us into a horror story of how veterans throughout our nation have been walking the corridors of time for 10, 20, 30, 40, and even 50 years, not knowing why their own government, duly elected by the American people, deny their very viable disability claims, despite incontrovertible evidence in the veterans' favor. Now, a very short time after the story of World War II veteran Arco Ciancanelli, 80 years old, was told in the Chicago Sun-Times issue of December 26, 2004, with the veteran's picture on the front page of the newspaper, and the dismay that Senator Barack Obama and Senator Dick Durbin showed at the VA chicanery involving Chicago veterans, a VA check of $18,144 was sent to Mr. Ciancanelli within less than 2 weeks. The news headlines read, VA wakes up, sends vet $18,144. The relentless pursuit of the publicity that was given to this matter and the entire veterans issue has wakened up an angry public, and the VA fears publicity. The VA loves to hide in dark and dirty little corners like roaches, and the fear that this bloated bureaucracy has shown in the respect that Senators Obama and Durbin cannot be bought off has got the powers that be in Washington, D.C. frightened to death. It shakes them right up to the central office. Now, Knight Ritter, one of the largest newspaper chains in America, has sued the VA under the Freedom of Information Act and won. And now when a veteran needs information under the FOIA, which is the Freedom of Information Act, the VA can no longer ignore the law under penalty of prison terms. Knight Ritter newspapers have now joined in with the Chicago Sun-Times and the Chicago Tribune in one article after another of VA chicanery in the dispensing of disability compensation to our nation's injured vets. Veterans from all over the USA have been sending me newspaper articles from all the Knight Ritter newspapers. Now, this honorable World War II veteran, Mr. Arco Ciancanelli, he's a very highly decorated war veteran, very highly decorated by his nation. He holds the Distinguished Service Cross, the second highest award, second only to the Congressional Medal of Honor. He was also awarded a Silver Star, a Bronze Star, and a Purple Heart. But even that required congressional intervention. Last year, after U.S. Representative Rahm Emanuel's office interceded, he finally received his medals. Ciancanelli said he was always recuperating in hospitals when the medal ceremonies were conducted. Ciancanelli, now 80, wants his disability check back to 1945, and he deserves it. That's when he first applied to the VA and got nothing. For the past 7 years, the VA has been sending Ciancanelli a monthly check of about $700 for a gunshot wound and the effects of severe frostbite he suffered in World War II. Now, only two of the many injuries suffered in combat. Those are only two of them. This guy was hit around four or five times. He's not able to walk more than one block, but the VA would only give him back pay. Now, get this, Dr. Stan. The VA would only give him retroactive for 2 months. And they said, that's the law. It will not do you any good to complain, even if you get a lawyer. This situation is common amongst older veterans in dealing with a very mean-spirited VA. And my observations in this area are, even Clarence Darrow couldn't win with the antiquated and unfair rules of the VA and their U.S. Code Title 38, a poor substitute given veterans in lieu of the Constitution of the United States, and which they're deprived of in their dealings with the VA. They tell you, get an attorney. Now, that's a big joke at the VA, Dr. Stan, get an attorney. You can't get an attorney at the VA. Section 5904 of United States Code Title 38 says you're not entitled to an attorney, even if you want to pay for one, until you receive a final denial by the VA's infamous Board of Veterans Appeals. This process, with all the VA's denies, delays, and remands, ends up taking a veteran on the average of 7 years. Real legal representation attorneys are most needed at the local regional offices, where most of the abuse takes place, and a veteran is not allowed to bring his own attorney to the VA regional office. He's told he should contact the DAV, Disabled American Veterans, the American Legion, or another service rep. Now, in most cases, that's a stacked deck against the veteran and a violation against his constitutional and sometimes against his civil rights. The DAV and the American Legion, they sure know which side the VA butters their bread on, and between Section 5904... and Section 511A, the VA's finality clause, and Section 5902A, known as the gravy train statute, veterans stand two chances at a VA hearing, slim and none. This rat system cries out for reform, which is not the answer. It's really not the answer. The corruption within the system is too deeply ingrained. The only answer can be, take them down. These cases belong in a real court and not a kangaroo court, plain and simple. The only place to decide these cases, Dr. Stan, is in a federal district court closest to the veteran's home, and it's past due time that veterans were given legal parity equal to that of all other Americans, and it's shocking and yet at the same time pathetic that a veteran, the caliber of an Arco Ciancanelli, can be abused in this manner for over half a century by this degrading bureaucracy. Yes, Arco Ciancanelli deserves his full 100% disability compensation retroactive to his discharge from the armed forces in 1945, and there are no two ways about that fact. And yet we wonder how many hearings will this mean-spirited VA force this man to go through just to receive what he has been illegally denied since 1945.
Well, Arthur, we're just about out of time. Let's go ahead and get out your address and your telephone number. How can people get in touch with Americans for Constitutional Law?
Okay. We can be reached here. Well, let me give you the answer to the question. The answer is, while the media is keeping the news of veterans being robbed of their benefits alive and in the forefront, none. They wouldn't dare. Now, we can be reached very easily. We're Veterans for Constitutional Law, Limited. We're located at 112 Jefferson Avenue, 112 Jefferson Avenue, and that's in Port Jefferson, New York. Port Jefferson, New York. The zip code is 11777, for those of you who want to reach me by phone. 631 area, 631-474-4261. Our phones are always open, 631-474-4261. And if you're having a problem with the evil empire, the Veterans Administration, we'd like to know about it, and maybe we can help. And there are no charges for this.
And, of course, everybody who works with Veterans for Constitutional Law apparently does it gratis because they really want to represent the veterans. You're not going to get the representation through the American Legion or the Veterans of Foreign Wars and these other organizations, because aren't they really all simply more or less being funded, at least partially, by the very government that they're supposed to be opposing?
Yep, they are.
All right,
Bill. They're being supported. I call them, the American Legion, the DAV, the VFW, I call them the Veterans Administration, own private support groups.
We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got about 3 minutes, Arthur. Why don't you go ahead and sort of wrap up your thoughts for the evening?
Okay, let me get to the last part of this. Okay, for those not familiar with the VA's treachery and lack of fair play with our nation's war engine, the meeting that was supposed to take place in the Chicago area with the new VA secretary, Mr. Jim Nicholson, and the Chicago area vets will never take place. Instead, the VA and the service organizations, the veteran service organizations, saw fit under the auspices of Dennis Hastert, Republican of Illinois, and the Speaker of the House, to move the hearing to a more remote area of Illinois so as the aggrieved Chicago veterans could not attend and the VA could keep ducking their questions and keep veterans like Richard Lesnovitz, one of the spokesmen for veterans, far away from the hearing. All these veterans were told, unless you were a service officer for the DAV or American Legion or were on their list of preferred veterans to speak, don't bother to come to the meeting. You will not be allowed to speak. They had even waited until the last minute to inform Senators Obama and Durbin of the change in location so they would not have time to attend and witness the chicanery between the VA and their service organizations. Now, why am I not surprised at what the VA is calling a meeting and their tactics? They do it in Washington, D.C. all the time, and don't expect the VA's Inspector General's investigation to be any better. Those veterans in the know will tell you that the VA Inspector General's office is a rubber stamp for the VA, and the one solution to the problem, as I said before, take them down with the help of the media and an angry public. I promise that we eventually will put an end to all this VA smoke and mirrors.
Well, now, are they closing down some of the VA hospitals?
Yeah, they're closing a few of the VA hospitals down, and has some bad news, too. Mr. Principi, who is the head of the VA, has got a new job. The government, they got a predator, so they put him in a nice predatory job. He's in charge of closing down the military bases in this country.
And, of course, really what happens is if you are doing a poor job, they usually promote you and give you a higher-paying job.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody is really ever held responsible for the things that they do that are really harmful. And it happens so very, very rarely that anybody really gets fired or gets, of course, punished for really failing to obey the law. It almost appears that the people in government are above the law. Arthur, I want to thank you so very much for being with us this evening and sharing these thoughts with us.
Dr. Stan, thank you for having me. And if we could arrange another appointment soon, I've got a load of stuff I put together for you.
All right, fine. Well, we'll certainly look forward to that. Our guest has been Arthur Bernclough of Veterans for Constitutional Law.
And it's always a pleasure to work with you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Take care, Doctor.
This is Dr. Stan here, and this is the time when I simply want to mention that if you really want to understand what's going on in our society, you need to get my video, Iraq, the Untold Story. It comes with a syllabus that has information and documentation on everything we say about all of the wars of the last century. And if you get the syllabus along with the video, why you can actually go through as we talk about the Boer War, as we talk about the Spanish-American War and the First World War. Why did America go to war, in Europe in 1917? It wasn't our war. We weren't ever threatened. And it was all simply a scam. They wanted to bring America into the war to make the world safe for democracy. That was the slogan. The war to end all wars, the war to make the world safe for democracy. And, of course, it was really to bring about the world government. The reason for the Second World War was the world government. The reason for the Third World War, the one we are engaged in today, is to bring about a world government. And that is the age-old plan of the ancient secret societies. So you'll certainly want to get my video, Iraq, the Untold Story, with a syllabus. We carry Bill Steele's book. If you haven't read it, you should. It's called The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies. And ladies and gentlemen, there is an ancient plan. There have been secret societies in the past. And if you don't know about them, you can't understand anything going on today. Remember, our politicians say one thing, and then they do a different one. Why do they do that? Well, because they never had any intention of doing what they said. They say one thing to win your curry and win your support, but so many of them are dedicated to the New World Order, the New World Religion. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and with that, you can get separately the video or separately the audio tape, or get them all three together in the Brotherhood of Darkness special. You need to get the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. And if you want to understand Michael Jackson, you need to get the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. But you'll get a lot about him in the 3 or 4 hour versions. You need to understand there really are people who've sold their souls to the devil. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on today really makes sense. There really is evil in the world. And there really are people totally dedicated to evil. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our web space, radioliberty.com. I just want to quickly mention that our afternoon shortwave frequency is 15-120. That's 15-120. And, of course, our evening frequencies, 58-35 and 74-65. 58-35, 74-65, but the afternoon is 15-120, and we certainly would appreciate a call from you to see what sort of a reception you're getting there, see if we need to be on a different frequency for the afternoon program. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or perhaps taking our newsletter on a regular basis. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, why, let me suggest perhaps of the January newsletter. It's the story of the wars that so many of we've been involved in, written from a point of view of a man who's on the other side, who's part of the establishment, who eventually defected and explained how we actually create wars because people won't go along with our agenda. He was one of the insiders who came forward. It's called Confessions of an Economic Hitman, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.